one and all, once again to Nerds on the Rocks episode 177. We are joined this week by Sam.
Hello.
Who apparently returned after ditching us for the Independence Day podcast.
Yeah, my family came into town for, 4th of July, sorry.
Did you watch the movie?
I did not, so
okay,
there's also
so
that.
Yes.
Worked out pretty well.
And we have James.
Hello. I also had future family visiting on 4th of July, so I had no excuse.
Future family?
Sister's boyfriend.
Oh.
Probable.
That's
fiance.
Less. Okay, that's less,
yeah.
Alright. I was hoping, like, you met a girl. Nope.
I was about to say, Sam makes stuff. He likes figuring out that stuff. But that's not why we're here this week.
Yeah, because Dan's not here to, interrogate.
Yes. This week we are. I mean, we kind of had a post E3 show where we kind of talked about E3, but one of the things that tends to come out of E3 is the other discussions about the industry as a whole, and we're just going to tackle some of the stuff that's come up since then. Stuff like the pre-order culture, preview culture, women in gaming, stuff like that. I'm going to kick it off with the one that pops up every year after E3. It wasn't as major this year, which I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
I think
it's
business.
But it's the Vons and video game one that tends to pop up every year after E3. Where, I guess because everybody sees all the games that we're going to put on the market back-to-back and realize how gory and bloody and violent these things can be.
Did you say violent?
Yeah.
Say that word again?
Violent.
What?
What's wrong with it?
That's not how you say that.
Whatever.
Violent?
Violent.
James, can you bag me up here? This sounds odd.
Oh, violent. I'm sure.
No problem. Easy.
Fine, whatever. Keep going.
But yes, like I said, this year it wasn't as bad. I think the big problem was with Ubisoft and showing severed heads during Assassin's Creed. Some people were kind of upset with Edith Dye, though I think part of that was also because of Ilya Bergenhammer turning into that game. But yeah, this tends to pop up every year, and I think it's just because we see Assassin's Creed, we see Call of Duty, we see a bunch of violent shooters and brawlers and stuff like that back to back. But I feel like a lot of the companies did a decent job of at least trying to balance it somewhat this year. Scalebound wasn't that violent. Auron wasn't that bad. Microsoft had a few indie games. Sony had a big thing with Little Big Planet 3. They had.
I'd say EA did a good job of it in that instead of showing violent games, they showed concept art for potential violent games. Like, this is the thing we are making. Investors, yeah. Wink, nudge, keep handing in the dough.
Yeah.
I mean, they showed The Sims, which was as non-violent as you get. Ubisoft had their fitness game.
That's the way I play it.
Yeah.
And
my
they had
always find a way to die, so.
They had their Just Dance. I don't know what you... I forget what it was called, but the Just Dance where everybody can use their cell phone and
dance
together.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say about that. It was just a thing.
And Nintendo's always the exception to the rule because pretty much all of their games aren't that... I'm going to say they aren't that gory. I think they're pretty violent when you think about them, but they aren't that gory, so nobody ever questions it.
Right.
The difference between a Bugs Bunny cartoon and... for example, like a slasher film.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, because Bugs Bunny, because when you think about the stuff they do in cartoons, like dropping anvils and throwing people off cliffs, that's pretty violent, but nobody ever thinks about it because it's cartoony and it's, nobody ever in terms of hurt. Like, if they dropped an anvil and blood splattered everywhere, I think people would freak out.
Yeah, it's all about tone.
Yeah. Of our presentation, because I said the same thing about one of the games Nintendo showed was Splatoon, and that game, when you shoot somebody, they blow up and pop. And when you think about that, that's extremely violent, but because they pop into paint, it doesn't seem like a big deal. But yes, there was that. The other one, and this one has kind of, again, this is a conversation that comes up often, but this one was taken to new levels because of Ubisoft, again, is women in gaming, and not just women on the creative side, but women being represented in actual games.
That comes up every E3 as well. Actually, you didn't see the that Kotaku writer write the same article about sexism this year, so that's kind of good. I thought that was the first.
I think because more people were cognitive of it, because we saw EA had a I think The Sims was presented by a female. I want to say some game was presented by a female. Microsoft, Sony.
Ubisoft's entire presentation was done by Allison from Archer.
She always does it, but I don't think that's what he meant. Or is that what you're talking about, or do you mean, like, female characters in the games themselves?
Well, I meant both of them. I mean, because part of the reason that Kotaku usually writes that stuff is that they'd mention that we had, like, 50 presenters, and there was only, like, 3 females in the whole bunch or something like that. And
I never quite understood that, because that's the makeup of the, and that's about the percentage of females that are actually in the games industry, right?
Well, I think that's crazy. I think that's part of the problem.
It's
a systematic problem because it's harder and harder for females to get in there, and then you don't really hire the ones that are there.
Right.
That's part of it. The other thing was the fact that there really wasn't that many games with female characters this year. I don't think Microsoft had any.
I can't think of any off the top of my head. Yeah.
Unless they showed off the Tomb Raider trailer, I couldn't remember where.
They did have the Tomb Raider trailer. Okay, so they had Tomb Raider. Sony had. I thought Sony had one. EA had Mirror's Edge 2. Ubisoft, I guess technically, had the fitness game. And
does that count though, really? For talking about female lead characters, the fitness game, like that's almost worse.
I think that's the point. I think Nintendo did a pretty good job with it this year as well. And I don't know if it's a company push or it's just something that's happened with them. But Hyrule Warriors, everybody kind of mentions right now. I think it's 6 females to 1 male character in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Link's the only playable male, at least until they add Groose.
Yeah, so far. And then I think they've been really cognitive of adding more female characters to Smash Brothers. Bayonetta is a female-driven franchise, of course. Splatoon is a new IP that's female-driven as well. So they've done a decent job with that. But yeah, it's still kind of the point where... And again, it's not even necessarily about having... I think ultimately people do want more games with female leads, but I think part of it is also stuff even Assassin's Creed with 4-player co-op and you don't get any female options.
Right. When I looked at the actual situation of that, it's basically doing the older Halo style where they just duplicate you. It's like, yes, that's less annoying, and I'm assuming the actual multiplayer, they'll have female skins. It was one of those examples where the PR made this really bizarre answer.
But a game doesn't have any actual multiplayer. It only has the co-op.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it doesn't?
No, it's strictly co-op.
That's strange. Oh, yeah, and here's...
I'm okay with that, to be honest, but...
I mean, if they had started with the excuse, or not the excuse, but the reason, it's multiplayer, so you're all playing as the same guy, that would have been fine. But instead, they went on an old excuse, a very bad excuse when you consider how many people actually work on the Assassin's Creed, on one Assassin's Creed game alone.
Yeah, because their excuse was that they didn't have the resources to do it. It would take too much money, and they'd have to animate them differently, which happens. But you don't,
say that.
it's one of those things, sometimes you want people to talk straight to you, and, it's fair, and sometimes you kind of want them to, honestly speaking, I don't think there would have been a right answer for them. I think people would have been upset either way. I just don't think their comment was the best way to respond to that, and they haven't helped themselves since E3, because we've also had comments referring to Far Cry 4, which doesn't have any playable female characters either. But they do have
planning on adding it in as a feature. But that was going to be.
Is Far Cry 4 gonna have the co-op again, or is it?
It's two-player co-op, as far as I know. Where
I think it's four-player co-op.
Like, are they both? Are they all the same character though? Is it also that situation?
No, it's a weird co-op.
No, you kind of play as this dude named Herc. I guess he was in Far Cry 3.
I don't remember anything about Far Cry 3 at this point, to be honest.
Exactly.
So I'll take your word for it.
Oh, okay. So yeah.
I wonder if this increased vocality about the lack of female representation in games is also spurned on by the recent box office success of a bunch of female-led films. Like the old saying is that female-led films don't make money, and yet what were some of the highest-grossing movies of last year? Catching Fire, Gravity, Frozen. Hell, Maleficent has made more money in the U.S. than Spider-Man. It's like there's clearly an audience there.
Well, I think that's a good point. It's like, we tend to harp on it for gaming because, all of us here are gamers. But it's actually a problem with every industry, with not just female representation, but just representation in general. Like, even with those success stories you mentioned, you still have the old adage in Hollywood that female-led movies don't do well. So that's why they tend to not happen as often. And, I mean, you mentioned all those movies, but, we've had this discussion. There's still no female-led comic book movie, and that's been the big genre for the past decade. We haven't had a big female-led sci-fi film in quite some time either. And that was a huge thing, too, with Terminator and Alien.
Oh,
what?
The Hunger Games movies. Those are sci-fi.
Would you
really
count those as
sci-fi? I wouldn't count them as sci-fi.
Dystopian. Yeah, well, I feel most dystopian stuff does fall on sci-fi. But you mean more sort of blockbuster.
By that logic, everything
fantasy, sci-fi entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah, something that can be comparable to say Terminator, Star Wars, basically.
What is the last sci-fi movie then? By that logic, Star Trek.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, I think Edge of Tomorrow would be sci-fi.
Okay, sure, I guess. Right, but that's not really...
I actually forgot about Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess, okay.
Not
that it was bad. Not that it was bad, I haven't seen it. I just completely, just mostly...
Yeah, and I mean, we also have Guardians of the Galaxy this year, which is huge sci-fi.
Sure, yeah.
There's
something about the marketing for Guardians that bothers me.
Well, we'll get into that later on this summer, I'm sure. I was also going to say,
it's kind of related to this.
Oh, go on.
Is that Gamora doesn't speak?
Most of them don't.
That's fair, but it's she in particular gets the really Shaft end of the deal.
Wait, who doesn't speak?
Gamora.
I don't know the character's name.
The green chick. The only chick on the team.
She didn't speak in the comics or in the movie?
No, she didn't speak in the trailer.
Oh, okay.
She has one line.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
I guess minor insider baseball, a lot of that comes from the trailers are always aimed towards the lowest common denominator, which means basically the model is sticking all the action and boobs and plot dumping as you can. So it's always very much pandering to whatever they think is the mass audience.
Yeah,
that's why you had, the biggest movie of last year was sold on the Wacky Snowman instead of, hey, familial love. Isn't that a good idea for a movie?
Well, I feel like that's different in the sense that it would give away the big twist of the film.
Maybe. But even then, it's very much the example of they're selling it on what they think is the basis, what's going
that.
To get the most butts in the seats. And
that
tends to often lead to very, underrepresented females in the trailer where they don't say anything.
I'm looking forward to Guardians, but I think one of the things that's been interesting with it, because everybody kind of brings this up as Marvel going out there with it, which they are, but the advertisement and a lot of the focus has been on the so white character in the film. Star-Lord is the leader of the group, but he gets the most shine in the trailer. He's the center of the poster. He's the one who's doing the shoot in Entertainment Weekly. So it's been that. I will get back to games in a second. I was also going to say, I think the other thing with sci-fi is that we kind of had three movies come out last year that didn't do too hot in that genre, so that's probably why. Because last year was After Earth, Oblivion, and Elysium.
Well, they were all terrible. It has nothing to do with the big sci-fi.
Oblivion was all right.
Elysium was pretty bad.
It was
Oblivion.
I didn't
say it was okay. Or After Earth.
He didn't say it.
I'm just going to assume.
I think everybody agrees that After Earth was shit. Like, even people who didn't see After Earth know that it was shit.
Yeah, I haven't.
I assumed it was going
I like Gary Whitta, too, which is why I was mad about that. But...
Oh, he wrote that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he wrote After Earth.
Wow, he's the guy who also wrote the Walking Dead game.
Yeah, well, one of them, one of the episodes.
Oh, yes, one of them. So
I think he was the writer on one of them and like the overall story guy, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. Anyway,
Book of EI. Was made not that great.
Well, he's got a pretty spotty track record.
Yeah, I think people love him because he's actually kind of ingrained in the community because he's like one of us. Because I know he's a gaffer, or he was, and he used to do podcasts on like 1UP. But yes, I mean, going back to that, it's going to be interesting because we've had female success stories, but they tend to be brushed off. Like, I was listening to a Retronauts today about girl games and stuff like that. And like some of the stuff that, you know, like, even though Tomb Raider and Metroid are successful franchises, people don't tend to think of them as girl franchises. And that's a weird logic, but... Yeah, even like FemShep, you kind of got the back end of the deal with marketing. She wasn't on the cover by default and stuff like that.
I mean, yeah, sure.
The Inquisitor for Dragon Age is kind of also in that weird position.
I just still fall on the side. I mean, yes, it sucks that happens, but at the same time, it's who their audience is. So, as you said, it was a self, you know, one of those snakes that eats its own head.
Yeah, but that's, and again, that's the problem that people have. It's like you can say that's the audience they cater to, but if you only cater to that, you're not going to grow. And that's the problem. It's like after a while, like video games won't grow. Like, I mean, the industry is going to grow. The console space won't if they continue to narrow their focus to guys between 18 and 35.
Right, I guess so. That's true.
Yeah, it's especially odd with BioWare considering they like their games do tend to have one, like the most even split across gender lines between their fan base.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's also interesting. And, you know, like, I think... I'm sure people want to see people like them in games, but it's also about just kind of having more appealing games. Like, I'm sure there are girls who play first-person shooters, but I feel like that's a genre that's really kind of catered towards a very specific niche. Because you don't see, like, older people playing first-person shooters. Partially because of the motion sickness and stuff that people can suffer from it. But, you know, like, you get stuff like...
Is that a thing?
What, motion sickness or first-person
shooters? No, getting old and then getting motion sickness.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, your eyes get weaker.
Is that a thing? Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's...
Did you not know that?
No, that's horrifying.
Do you not hang out with old people?
No. I make it a solid point to not hang out with old people.
Yeah. So, Sam, you should, like, take one to Worlds of Fun, like, strap a camera to their head, and, like, later on just watch it and see what you find.
What? Which World of Fun? I don't know what you said.
Just find an old person, like, take them to, like, a roller
coaster. Oh, and then strap a... Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Roller coaster. See, you should have started with that. I don't know what World of Fun is. Just like movies, I haven't been on too many roller coasters.
Oh, God. That's another subject for another day. I'm still kind of getting over the fact that you don't hang out with many old people, so...
Do you?
But say, Earl, you might be the oldest person that I talk to on any kind of consistent basis. Not counting my parents.
It's kind of sad, because there's about, like, what, 10 years older than you?
Not that much older than he is.
Yeah, I don't think you're 10 years older than me.
Isn't Sam 20?
I'm 22.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, never mind.
But yeah,
right.
We'll get to that. But yes, your body does deteriorate as you get older. I thought that was pretty common knowledge.
Well, unless you, like, sacrifice virgins, in which case you're young forever.
Or you're, like, yeah, anyhow.
That would be
I mean, we always kind of, but that's actually a thing we don't see. And this is actually something that happens in other genres as well. You don't see characters who age much. Like, you don't see many people who go beyond, like, their 30s or 40s. You don't see many games. I don't know any games that start...
Oh,
that
especially game. Not. I think it'd be really cool if they aged Batman up for the next game, but I don't think they're going to do that.
They won't do that. No, DC wants Batman to stay young forever.
Well, I mean...
Because they would constantly release stuff with him as an old guy.
Well,
Yeah, I was going to say, Batman Beyond was successful, and that had him as, like, a 70-something-year-old dude. So,
well,
I mean,
true. But, I mean, they have, like, this thing where it's, like, they mostly want Batman to, like, stay between, like, his early 20s and his, like, mid-30s at
well,
the
best. Yeah, he's usually in his mid-to-late 30s.
It feels like they're willing to do, like, alternate storylines like Dark Knight Returns and stuff, where they'll have an aged-up Batman, but it's pretty much always a one-off thing.
Yeah,
never going to really be the main continuity for any series.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, partly, because we were supposed to have this podcast, but we didn't do it, that Girl Meets World just premiered, and that's interesting in the fact that we actually got to see characters that we grew up with grow up themselves, or at least I grew up with. You folks were probably much younger when that show ended.
I watched that show, surprisingly enough, of all the things I haven't watched.
But, yeah, I mean, so we get to see them, like, you know, it's 15 years later, they've kind of, you know, we got to see them grow up as kids, and now they're adults, they're parents of their own, and how they take those lessons and instill them in their kids, and how they deal with the generational change. And it's the same thing I kind of had with American Wedding, where it was nice to kind of see those characters come back after, you know, again, characters introduced in the 80s, 90s come back like 15 years later and see them deal with being adults and having kids and, you know, having a job and the responsibility that comes with that and still trying to keep, you know, trying to keep these close-knit relationships. And I do think it's something that would be interesting to examine with games. But again, part of it is that a lot of game franchises haven't been around that long, and if they have,
they don't have the staying power.
Yeah, I mean, technically speaking, there's no reason to age Mario. We don't really know how old he is. Link is always a different character. Samus is pretty much around the same age because her games, even though there's like 10 of them, all take place within like 2 years.
I'm trying to think of a franchise where it's like...
I mean, I guess Metal Gear would be a good example because Snake...
Yeah, Metal Gear is the only one since they age Snake up with magic signs.
But then again, they also de-age him all the time, too, so it's not like it really...
Well, no, they just go back to the 60s. It's like, here's his dad, kind of.
Yeah, they get to jump around that world and those characters. But yeah, that's a character who has actually aged since he's been introduced. Even Nathan Drake doesn't seem... he's aging in the story, but he doesn't seem to age.
Right. And he's a character that they could kind of age and do something cool there.
Is he aging in the story?
Well, I mean, it's been some time between each game.
I'm not asking to be sarcastic. I'm genuinely serious.
I think there's several years between 1 and 3. I think they mentioned that when he meets up with Ellie again.
Yeah, I'm playing through the series now, so I can confirm or deny how much he's aged. But I feel like he's done a little bit, and I could have sworn that was sort of the hook for Uncharted 4, that it was a definitively older Drake.
Well, it's,
I mean, they only showed like 8 seconds of it. So.
It's old. Well, the voiceover makes it sound older, the way Sully's talking to him. But again, he doesn't look that much older in the game. Like, if they wanted to make it older, maybe he can't jump as far, maybe he can't run as fast, maybe he can't go hop
into
the burn.
But then that would hinder the player, and they don't want that.
Yeah, and that's sort of why.
So basically, screw old people.
Games.
But I guess my point is, like, you can find an interesting way to deal with age in games.
The only way I could think of to do it is to make, like, a Gone Home style game where you play as an old person. Or, like, that would be kind of funny to see Outlast as an old person, but, like, a 60-year-old man.
Or even something like...
Then you wouldn't have to make any, like, arbitrary restrictions for them to have trouble running away from a slasher villain.
Yeah, it makes sense that you can't jump up ledges this time.
Yeah, or even stuff like Telltale games. Like, imagine if you had, like, a Walking Dead from the point of view of somebody, like, 70 trying to get out and the struggles they have to go with and stuff like that.
They would die the moment you press the start button.
I mean, maybe they would.
It's a $60 product, and then it's just they immediately die right off the bat.
Yeah.
But
the whole game.
And it turns out you actually just bought a 6 feet under video game. We're just going through burying people
and
contemplating the meaning of the human life.
And then your heart out, Dark Souls.
I mean, Hershey was a survivor in The Walking Dead.
Oh. Was.
That's a loose term, survivor.
He was a survivor.
He lives on a farm, dude.
Wait,
so,
this is someone from the show, right?
Yeah.
The comics and the show, yeah.
He was
don't mind.
When did he appear? Because I give up when they were on the farm for six episodes doing nothing.
That was when he appeared.
He owns the farm.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, he was Maggie's dad.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I'm seeing an old guy in the Google search.
During the season 2 finale, his special perk was unlimited ammo.
Which he gets back during season 4, but eventually all good things must come to an end, as they say. And I guess on the same note, that was kind of old as well.
R.I.P. in pieces, Herschel.
But old people. It is possible for them to be in games, but probably not the traditional action stuff. More like more adventure or some kind of experimental indie thing.
And I'm okay with that. I honestly think, and this is something that kind of came out of E3 as well, but this was different, was I think it was Miyamoto who said something about the creative immaturity of the game industry.
Yes.
And people took that the wrong way, as they tend to do when they don't, and in fact they're being attacked. And I don't think he meant, like, everything's childish. I think he just meant that we're so... Because
Miyamoto said everything sucked, I'd be inclined to believe him.
But I think it's because we're an interactive it's an interactive medium, and I think what people want, like, what we tend to get is, like, everything's action. Like, it may be different action. It may be a first-person shooter action. It may be a third-person shooter action. It may be, you know, swords and gunfight action, but they all tend to be action because we want something. We want some form of interaction with the game, where I think, like, we don't have many games that are, like, quote-unquote rom-coms, or we don't have anything like a drama or anything like that in game, and finding ways to make those things interesting and compelling would be, or even creating brand new genres that we haven't, that we can't do in movies and TV and books and stuff like that.
Well, not to AAA anyway. Apparently that is part of a big thing in the indie space.
Yeah, and that's what his quote was. And I think we're going to see as of that as we go forward, because everybody's going to want to consolidate around their big brands because they can't afford to try anything else.
Yeah, I think we're going to very much see sort of how movies have become, at least on the blockbuster side, as hyper-franchise-heavy as possible. I think we're also going to sort of see the birth of the awards-baiting games, where you have these, like, games that are technically smaller in budget and scale, but still being published by those larger publishers with perhaps a greater focus on, like, story or characters or whatnot, that are basically made as the industry moves towards, at least in sort of like the more enthusiast side, more towards that kind of thing as a primary focus.
Oh my gosh, I cannot wait until somebody... I was about to say, I cannot wait until somebody coins the term VGA bait.
I have a feeling we will have something other than the VGAs at that point.
I hope. That's a pretty low bar, if you ask me. It'd be like, you just need a gun, some titties, and Mountain Dew.
I mean,
dude, why anybody made that game yet?
It's just Grand Theft Auto.
I would put this
note. It's like, didn't GTA come out already?
Yeah, that was on last year.
But you're not playing. I want to literally, like, throw explosive cans of Mountain Dew at people with some girl in a bikini.
Wait, isn't that Sunset Overdrive?
That's right.
I'm pretty sure that's either Postal 3 or Duke Nukem Forever. Actually, that probably is Postal 3.
I loved the idea of Duke Nukem Forever. I will still say that first trailer for Duke Nukem Forever looked like it'd be a decent game.
I think everybody...
the first one, like, in the 90s, right? Like, the first trailer when they started working on it in the 90s. You mean that one, right?
Oh, of course. I was definitely following Duke Nukem in the 90s. You know me. You know my history with things.
But, so yes, gaming can work on more females, more old people, more people of color. I think females are going to be the first one, because I think they're the easiest one. Not easy in that they're easy to do, but it's easy to say, because half the population are females, so it's easy to say, like, you should have that. Right. Then everything else is just percentages, and that's also a cultural thing. Because percentages are different wherever you go.
I have a question.
Yes.
So Ubisoft is, like, said their whole thing on, you know, females are hard to animate and all that. So Infamous First Light comes out in, like, a couple weeks, and Dragon Age comes out in October. How many people do you think are gonna, like, buy those two games, and Dragon Age specifically, play as a female just to stick it to Ubisoft and tweet them pictures, be like, it's not hard to animate?
Not many.
I don't think many. I don't.
There will be 13 of them on Tumblr. Actually, they're probably doing it as
probably
we speak.
30 of them on Tumblr.
There are probably at least 27 people on Tumblr right now who are playing through Assassin's Creed Liberation just to tell Ubisoft to suck it.
Yeah. I mean, that goes into the problem. They already got your money, but yeah. I mean, people did that around E3. I think, again, I mentioned Hyrule Warriors. People made fun of that because that has, like, 4 playable characters, so Nintendo must be going bankrupt. At the time, it had, like, 4 playable female characters. Again, we had Tomb Raider. I think even Call of Duty has female character models now.
Yeah.
I'm
pretty sure Ghosts had playable female avatars. Because I think Ghost was the first one where you could, like, choose what you looked like in multiplayer. So then they added the female skins now. It's like, hey, even Call of Duty has them, Ubisoft.
Yeah, which is definitely a weird bar if Call of Duty, of all people, has it.
Yeah, especially...
We figure they've got the money.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always said that Call of Duty is the series
and
I'd
you don't
most
exactly
like
have
to
animate
a weird experiment.
Yeah,
like, Call of Duty is the series I'd most like to do some kind of weird experimentation. Because no matter what they do, they're going to... So long as the one before it was still normal and sold really well, the next one will sell crazy no matter what. So it's the perfect series for one of the studios to get, like, really ambitious.
I'm
talking, like, push some buttons politically level ambitious.
Assassin's Creed. I mean, Assassin's Creed is no doubt. It sells, like, 10 million copies each. So it's not like it's a poor man's franchise. This is why people have problems with it. It's a franchise that's worked on by, like, 1,000 people, and it sells 10 million units. Like, you could have found money in your couch from the Vita port of something to make a female model. And I think that's the other problem. Like, they've had female character models in previous games, so it's hard to justify that they couldn't just
And I think the guy who used to work on Assassin's Creed 3, like, even called them out. He said it's like Abilene had like some of Connor's character animations.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm playing XCOM and this UFO thing just turned into a giant, like, spider with a tail and ate 3 of my people. So,
dude, how frustrating is that?
That's the first time that it happened.
And
all my people are dead, and now I'm very sad. Because I had 5 people left in my squad. I'm playing Iron Man mode, so if these people die...
Dude,
yeah, I want to start up another XCOM playthrough, because I think I'd screwed one up early on, but, oh man, like, it's the same thing why I can't really play Fire Emblem. It's just too stressful.
Are we done without the
Yes.
We can talk about the Jada.
I think, we have fixed sexism.
Well,
us 4 guys have all fixed sexism in the industry. We deserve a pat on the back.
That's always an issue.
We can't get a pat on the back unless we're white. So
I can get a pat on the back.
Yeah, so James and I have to take credit for it.
Yes, I was going to say something less serious, but something I find really humorous that popped up this week is the GameStop pre-order. I don't want to say controversy. It's not a controversy.
So people are making a big deal about that, but I feel like this is kind of already happening.
Been happening.
In some aspects, it definitely feels like it's, like, been happening for a while, because there are already, like, retail exclusive missions.
Okay, we should clarify this first. Okay.
Yes.
So, basically, at least from what I can tell, GameStop announced that, you know, in addition to the usual pre-order bonuses that they do before, they now want to work with publishers, like, from the development stage to work on setting aside content as GameStop exclusive.
I wasn't even talking about that one. I don't even. I forgot if anything came of that. I thought they said they weren't going to do that, but, you know, he said, she said stuff. I was talking more about people got upset because they announced that the original cast from Aliens was going to reunite for a pre-order DLC for Aliens Isolation.
No one cares about that.
But you would think people don't care about that. But Polygon wrote an article about why you shouldn't pre-order Aliens Isolation.
Okay.
Or you shouldn't pre-order any game.
Polygon writes articles about everything, so.
Well, yeah, but it was a debate, and it
sorry, go on.
Well, I said this. I am of 2 minds of this. I think as a consumer, you are free to pre-order whatever the hell you want. I think it's terrible business practice. Well, not terrible business practice because it makes sense. You get people to give you money before you get them a product. But like we're getting to the point now where you can't just like pre-order a game to get the full game because GameStop has something, Amazon has something, Best Buy
has something.
Everybody has like their exclusive content, and you can't. You're not going to pre-order five different copies of the same thing to get all the content. So what's that? So it tends to happen. Like we had this with Watch Dogs, where they literally had to come out with a graph showing you what
like,
you got.
This is the standard edition. This is the edition with the season pass. This is the limited edition in America. This is the limited edition
this
in the UK.
This is the Steam edition that comes with hacker hats for Team Fortress.
Like, when did
this is the one that comes for a T-shirt for your PlayStation Home avatar.
This is the one that comes for your Xbox Live avatar, which also links to your Uplay account, which also goes to Steam, which also goes to PSN.
And this one will give you a special edition Tumblr theme.
Oh, this one also has a soundtrack.
Yeah, and this one has the soundtrack of Watch Dogs 2. Yeah, we wrote the soundtrack first.
This one also has the writing for Watch Dogs 2. It's just a picture of the writer like taking a shit on a piece of paper.
This one gives you a 6-month membership pass to WikiLeaks. You can actually help hack into the United States government files.
This one is a picture of a middle finger to all PC players.
And this one is a Dreamcast. We just gave you a Dreamcast. Nope, no cores or games or anything.
Also, this is a file that shows like the super high-res graphics that PC gamers can't access and is only for PS4 and Xbox One users only.
You know, there's a reason I hate the chicken fight in the Family Guy. It's a great joke that goes on way too long.
You should keep this in.
I feel like the appeal of most Family Guy jokes is that a lot of them is that they go in and out of being funny just because they go on too damn long.
It's like true.
Okay, this is still going. Now I'm annoyed. Okay, now I'm amused again. It's just set back and forth the whole time.
Yeah. And that's pretty much as you adjusted the interaction just was for me.
I thought it was funny, James.
Yeah, it was funny at first, and then it kept on going.
I suppose the weirdest thing in the Watch Dogs example is sort of why on a certain consumer rights level I do get why people are annoyed with this, but I don't annoy myself personally. Watch Dogs, like just the retail thing, like I just had the retail box copy, is a really full game. Like it was at the point where like this feels overstuffed. Like there's an entire act that you could have taken out and it would have flowed a lot better. So
there's
it's like, okay, how do you have so much time to also make extra stuff for? It's like, hey, maybe this is the reason games cost so damn much. It's because you make them so damn big.
Well, I mean, they also had several years, but I think, I'm not going to begrudge anybody who pre-orders, you pre-order, whatever. I just find it weird that so many people are just basically dime bagging games. Like, you pre-order games just because you think it's going to be good. Which, again, I understand pre-ordering systems because those might be harder to find at launch date, but I don't remember the last time I haven't been able to find a game I wanted on launch day.
Right.
Exactly.
Or,
like,
I think it depends on the game.
I think there are only two real reasons to do it. One, if it's like Steam, where it comes with somewhat of free games, like, say, when I pre-ordered Bioshock Infinite, it came with the first one, or when I pre-ordered Deus Ex Human Revolution, it came with the first two. Or if it's something like a niche game, like something from Atlas or NIS, which is already going to get a really limited printing, like, that's the only example where there would be a chance of not being able to get it on launch day, no problem.
Yeah, because I've even seen like collector's editions, that stuff that they sell for like $150. You wait a month or two, nobody's gonna buy it. They have it marked down for like $20 because it takes up more room than the actual game, and nobody buys it beyond launch. So you might as well just
I saw an Aliens Colonial Marines collector's edition for $20, and I almost got it because the statue is pretty neat.
People I remember I saw the, I think, is it Batman Arkham City or Asylum that came with this huge Batarang?
I think it's Arkham City.
I think it was Arkham Song, so Arkham City came with, like, the Batman bust.
See, that sounds just cool enough but dumb enough for me to want to pre-order it.
Yeah, but it wasn't even a pre-order. I saw it at Toys R Us at $25, and I was going to buy it, but I'm like, I already have the game. It defeats the purpose of buying this whole thing, even though it was cheap.
Do you guys remember...
Collector's edition I own was from Mass Effect 3, and that was just because I wanted the soundtrack to go with it. Arkham Asylum was the one with the Batarang.
Yeah, or the is it Halo 3 with the giant where you get the helmet?
Yeah, the one that can fit on your cat.
Yeah, that was like $30, like 3 months later.
Dude, do you guys remember, I think it was Modern Warfare 2, that had not the RC plane.
Night vision goggles.
Yeah, the night vision goggles. Those things cost like, $100? And then, like, a couple weeks later, I think they were down to, like, $50.
Yeah, because the only people who are interested in that stuff are first-day buyers or collectors, and they want to pre-order that so they can get their hands on it. And once that's done, it's really just going to sit there until somebody decides to buy it on clearance. So, again, I've said this before. The only reason to pre-order or even get a game day one is if you want to be part of the conversation.
And even then, you don't need to pre-order it. Just show up at, you know, as we were saying, just show up.
I mean, if you want to show up for the midnight thing, yeah. But otherwise, you could really... You
even the midnight
no
thing,
problem.
You don't need to pre-order it.
I've never
pre-ordered a game, and I've shown up at midnight all the time, and they still had cops. Granted, right. I lived in College Station. I haven't tried that in Los Angeles, but...
You can also, like, go on YouTube. You can also go on YouTube and refresh the page for, like, every other hour. Because someone's probably got the entire game finished by then, and uploaded.
I mean, push comes to shove, and I think it's a really
especially on my coast now. Y'all get it for 3 hours before I do.
Yeah.
Go to PC, we all get it at the same time, man. I actually came to turn down at 11 Eastern Standard Central Standard Time.
Yeah, and I believe, I guess they changed their policy. As far as I know, GameStop allows you to pre-order a game up until the day it comes out. So, like, if it comes out at midnight, you can pre-order at like 7.
I believe you.
Yeah,
like I'm guessing because then they'll just set another copy aside into that staff.
Yeah.
And I mean
right.
you can pre-order it from the moment that the game's announced.
Right. And
it's like we have this system, it's coming out eventually, we don't know how much it costs, but you can pre-order it if you want.
Yeah. And they hold it for like every 48 hours, but even like after the game comes out, you can still just like have them hold it for you. Because I think I remember hearing a story where someone had it held for like about a month.
That's just weird. I would not. I mean, they have to keep your money, but I wouldn't hold the product for you. That sometimes you'll get some snotty GameStop employees who are like, "Oh, I can't sell this to you if you haven't pre-ordered," even though we have a box full of copies and everybody who's pre-ordered probably picked it up. But or they set it aside, which they're supposed to do. But other than that, again, I mean, like James said, the only time I ever pre-order is if there's too good of a deal to pass up. Like, you know, it's half off, or you get a $25 gift card from Amazon, or, like, you pre-order it and you get, like, I bought Mario Kart day one because you got a free game with it, and granted, I could have bought it, I could still buy it until the end of this month, but, hey, I get a free game, I'm gonna get it when I get it. I've had this discussion before, what was the last game you folks have pre-ordered?
Fable 3. I remember that.
So trust issues is why you no longer pre-order games.
That is a long time ago.
You know what? That was a good half a game.
Yeah,
the first half of Fable 3
was pretty good. Yeah, I guess it was GTA 5, but then again, that's the only game I've picked up. Like, I haven't picked up many AAA games at launch recently. Like, the only games I've played this year are Watch Dogs and Titanfall. And Titanfall I bought, like, a week after.
Right.
It was like $30 a week after.
What about on PC, so?
So
Origin doesn't have sales.
It's $20, right? No.
Why?
Sorry.
I'll check Amazon.
Yeah, I think the last one I pre-ordered... Well, technically speaking, I pre-ordered Destiny, but I only pre-ordered it for the beta access, and then I canceled it, so that doesn't count.
Wait, you still get access to... Well, I guess you do still get access to the beta.
Yeah, because they send you a code that you put into the website.
Yeah,
I only game on PC, so I don't.
I thought the is it.
Yeah, okay. I've had to move more over to my 360 as my PC has started to age.
Yeah, I don't think the Destiny beta was ever on PC.
I don't think the games are PC.
It has PC listed.
Or not at all.
What?
This point in time, it's currently not coming for PC.
Destiny by Bungie, GameStop lists it as PS4.
Well, I'm saying, like, it's not coming out, like, day one on PC.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Hold on, let me check the internet.
And while he's looking for that, before that, I think the last game I pre-ordered was
No PC listed on Wikipedia at the moment, and I guess I'll pop over to the site quickly.
Well, Google says GameStop listed as PC, but...
So, Earl, your last game you pre-ordered.
Release date?
March 2015 release date for... What?
That's a placeholder.
No, this is an article saying, well, granted, it's from kdramastars.com, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can always trust
those. That's where I get all my release date news.
Right.
Gaming website.
So, fair, but...
Yeah, I'm on the Destiny website, and they only have the consoles listed.
I thought it was PC day and date. What the fuck?
No, okay, that's right. Yeah, that's when I figured it was Batman Arkham Origins, surprise, the Batman game. And the reason I did that was... The reason I did that was, I believe Toys R Us had a buy two, get one free sale. And I bought... I bought Pokemon X. I bought something else. Just X. And I bought something else. And I ended up canceling like two of them because Toys R Us has terrible shipping.
Yeah,
so by the time I was going to cancel Batman, it was too late. So, I mean, it worked out for me because I ended up getting the game for like $30.
It's not bad.
Yeah, because they don't... Because what they did is... I forgot how they did it. It was either... You didn't get a game free. You got a... Every game was discounted, so the discount carried over to the game after I canceled the pre-orders anyhow.
That makes no sense.
I don't work the system. I wasn't trying to game them or anything, but I'm not going to complain. And I think before that, I did Uncharted. Like, almost everything I pre-ordered, it was because of something. Uncharted 3 was the one I did before that, and that was because... I don't know if any of you had this, but they had that movie event where you could go to the movie theater to play the game.
I think I remember that. Like, I didn't go to it, but I think I know what you're talking about.
I'm going to believe you. I remember there was like a promo bus on campus when it was coming out. But yeah that probably happened.
I went to it. I wanted to see what it was because I've never heard of a company doing this for a game. It turned out to be nothing great, but and how many companies have like sneak peeks in movie theaters?
Oh, in movie theaters?
Like all of them.
Not many. I don't know if you remember, but I think it was like when Sony was marketing like the PS2, they had like these buses around Best Buys.
Oh yeah, that stuff. This could probably be a discussion for another show. I remember back in the days going to the Cube Club. When Nintendo was launching the GameCube, they would have they rent out a club and you go in and you pick GameCube launch titles. You'll get free sodas and stuff like that. I also went to the Wii U one.
Did you go to the Smash Brothers one?
No, I did not do the Smash. But the Smash Brothers one was different. That was in stores. This one was in a hotel. It's like a lounge.
Okay, you go,
they give you like Nintendo themed cake pops and soda. And you can try out a Wii U game. But like I said, that could be a discussion for another day. Like I said, pre-orders, do what you want with your money, but I don't see any reason to pre-order a game.
I think the thing that bothers me on both ends, one is like, I guess Arkham Origins is a good example, where it's like they had that very first trailer, and at the end it's like, pre-order now to play as Deathstroke. And that was like, 5-6 months before it came out. I don't really like how they do it like that. And the other thing is, I don't like how like journalists and stuff like try to shame people for pre-ordering.
I this is a discussion for another day, and I probably won't have Sam around. I don't want to get him in trouble for future work. I honestly hate the fact that journalists blame consumers for everything.
I hate that as well. I think it's pretty dumb. So you're not wrong. I'll take a stand here.
Yeah.
That it's not like anybody important listens to this podcast. Let's be a little bit real here.
Yeah, I'm just saying. You never know when somebody's gonna like dig up to you. But yeah, it's one of those things where I've never got. It's like anything that happens, it's entitled gamers, it's whiny consumers,
it's
the internet.
But then journalists will like turn around and like do that. And do the same thing. Like, God, what's a good example? Like, sometimes when a certain thing happens, like, journalists, like, get behind that, like, all the time. Unless it directly affects, in which case they're like, this is going to ruin my livelihood. I'm screwed out of a job if developers continue with this.
Yeah, I think a lot of times what I've seen is that they tend to hop on a bandwagon once they realize that it's a station and it's speeding away without them. So they tend to be playing catch-up. Either that or they try to stir up some type of controversy that does it. Like, the pre-order stuff, I honestly don't think is... I mean, I understand why people would be upset, especially if you're a fan of Aliens. but it wasn't like it's like we're used to this now. I don't know why like 6-7 years later it's like, oh, this is why you shouldn't pre-order a game now.
It's like when the Mortal Kombat X trailer came out, Ben Kuchera was like, oh, that's the worst thing that happened to gaming. That told me nothing about the game. It's like, it definitely tells you things about the game. One, you weren't paying attention. And two, you're just trying to, like, start something.
Well, I mean, you did say the word Kotaku there, so let's
see.
This is why I try not to worry too much about the marketing stuff, because everything that happens on the marketing side is completely separate from the development stuff. So I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever they're trying to use to sell me, of course they're probably going to try and bend and twist things around. I really think that, like, the only fair way to judge a game is purely within the context of itself. If you're judging it based on what they're marketing to you, that's kind of unfair to game. I mean, it happened with Mass Effect 3 a lot, where people were making complaints about stuff. It's like, what does that have to do with the game you have in your hand? You are basing it on marketing and PR stuff.
Well, I mean, I think that depends, again, on what, like, in some cases, especially, you know, speaking of pre-orders, a lot of it is kind of built on the notion of what they're trying to sell you. And I think the most recent and popular example would be Aliens Colonial Marines, where what they were trying to peddle people was nowhere close to what people got. I do think sometimes it can be a bit exaggerated. I think, for example, Watch Dogs, which I think we can all agree doesn't look as good as it did when it debuted, but the way people make it sound, it makes it sound like it's an eyesore. It's still a good-looking game.
Yeah,
it's just
nice
not as
game.
Good as it
yeah,
was
it's like
before.
Sometimes you cut together a jaw-droppingly amazing trailer, and the thing you get and the thing you see in the theater is mediocre. And sometimes they sell you something completely different than the thing you're going to see. Like, all the trailers for Drive were cut to make it look like some sort of car-centric action movie.
Right.
And it turns out it's, you know, completely different.
Less
and, yeah, people got annoyed by that
fair,
at first.
But
well, that happens a lot in movies. It's just that...
I'd love to see a game do that, though. They sell you a game, is this like... Oh, I guess... Okay, so I can think of one game that's done that. Dead Island, okay. Well, not the actual gameplay trailer, though, right?
There
or did
no
they have
actual
a gameplay trailer?
Gameplay trailer before it came out.
There wasn't. You're right, okay.
No.
That, sure. I was thinking Brutal Metal...
Brutal Legend,
there we go, sorry. Brutal Legend was like this character action game that suddenly turned into an RTS.
Another one would be Metal Gear Solid 2, which I don't think people have gotten over yet.
Does that really count, though?
Because, it was marketed as, it was pretty much marketed around the first mission, and nobody knew about the stuff that came afterwards.
Well, I mean, under that logic, then, couldn't you put Halo 2 under that same banner? Because most of the marketing was, like, focused on, like, oh, Master Chief is going to save the Earth, and then you find out, like, two or three missions, it's like, oh, yeah, also you're playing as a alien.
Here's this other character that you don't care about and never end up caring about.
He's never a character. Well, I mean, but you've played as Arbiter in that game, and I don't think he ever comes back.
Yeah, it does.
As he's a playable character?
He's the second player character in 3.
He's going to be in Halo 5.
Oh, I did not...
Is he actually going to be in Halo 5?
Because
I'm pretty sure they intentionally left him out of Halo 4 because of that reason.
I just sort of assumed
he retired after Halo 3. He just wrote his memoirs.
You know, for the longest time, I thought Master Chief died after Halo 3. I never saw the post-credits thing, so I literally thought the game ended with him dead.
How did you not see? Did you just, like, keep pressing the A button?
I just turned the game off. I didn't.
He was like, all right, let's go frag some noobs in Deathmatch.
I was about to say, I pressed the A button. I don't like watching credits.
Yeah.
You're the kind of guy who leaves the theater while the credits are rolling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shame on you.
I look on the internet to see whether or not it has a stinger scene, and then if it doesn't, I leave. What's wrong with that?
Actually, what I do with movies now is they usually keep the lights off if it has a post-credit sequence. I just wait until the house lights are up. That usually means get out.
Yeah, I'm part of the crowd who always stays through the entire credits. That's just sort of my movie geek thing. I'm like, yeah, I want to at least respect.
But it's not like the directors are there
by looking at their names.
It's not like those people know it.
It's just a personal habit thing I've acquired. I just like doing it out of respect.
What screws you over is they have two, because Captain America had two post-credit sequences.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. So I started
it's time.
AfterTheCredits.com. There's a whole website dedicated to it.
How did you not know? Wait, which Captain America?
The second one.
How did you not know it had two post-credit scenes? It's a Marvel movie.
No, they usually have one.
Yeah, I think that was the first one they started it with.
Avengers had two.
What was the other one?
Thor had two. Avengers, that was,
Avengers had two, Thor 2 had two.
Wait, Thor 2 had two?
Yeah.
Yeah. The first one was them going with the collector.
I didn't know that either.
The second one was him arriving back on Earth. See, this is why you stay through the credits, kids.
Yeah. Oh, I
get to
become, honestly speaking,
like a good person, and you get rewarded with more movies.
Honestly speaking, I just didn't care enough about Thor 2.
that's fair.
This is you eating your words.
Yeah, I kind of like
Thor 2. Honestly speaking, I don't know much about Thor 2.
I liked it
the first time, not so much the second time. It's a very fleeting movie. Like, I feel like I feel like it's jokey in some of the wrong places, so it ends up skipping by too fast and not really sticking with you that much.
That's the problem the first one had, too.
I think my best analogy for most Marvel
You just described every Marvel movie.
Yeah, my analogy
well,
for most
I think most
Marvel
of them balance the tone better.
Is
like here they put in jokey bits about character deaths.
Okay,
you described
Iron Man then. At the very least, Iron Man 3 was
That's basically what the franchises are. They're Iron Man. It's like, how can we get Iron Man into this movie? They can't do it with Captain America, so they had a bunch of people around him. Because half the movie, him and Black Widow are talking about his dating life.
Right.
And it's like, we'll just make jokes about this stuff. And it works sometimes. I think, you know, Robert Downey Jr. carries it really well. I think it hurt Iron Man 2 a ton.
A lot of things hurt Iron Man 2 a ton.
Yeah, but I don't... I think
for Avengers hurt Iron Man 2.
Yes, but... I was going to say, Marvel movies are fast food. They're good in the moment. They fill you up, but they don't really... You know, like, once you finish eating it, it's not like, oh, this was amazing food. It's like, oh...
To be fair, that's like 90% of movies.
Oh, yeah, and that's fine.
Blockbusters. I think they're a handful, and I think the better of the Marvel movies, like, I think... I guess the analogy I always use for, like, genre movies, like sci-fi, fantasy, action stuff, is basically burgers. And if, say, Pacific Rim is the best quality fast food burger... Something like, for example, Snowpiercer would be like a legitimately great like sit down restaurant burger. So like Pacific Rim would be a Five Guys, and then Snowpiercer would be what's a really quality.
I don't actually know what Snowpiercer is, so
it's amazing.
Help me at all because I've never heard of it. So
it's basically BioShock on a train.
That's not
what. Okay, you've sold me, but I still don't know. How have I never heard of it?
Because it's
a very limited release, and it only came out like 2 weeks ago.
It's out on video on demand now, so you can rent it on iTunes.
Rent it. Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
So Sam, here's what happened.
We're not going to say that on air.
So Sam, here's what happened. Basically, like, people were excited for this movie. Weinstein wanted to like cut about 20 minutes from it. The director's like, no. So Weinstein was like, yeah.
There's still a Weinstein?
Yeah,
I thought Harvey Weinstein was still around.
Dead.
So Weinstein was like, "Huh, okay, fine. You can have your movie as it is. We're just not going to release it to everybody."
Hmm.
Yeah, so it only got like 350 screens in the U.S.
Interesting.
Which it ended up actually like based on its per theater average, actually did pretty darn well, like for a movie of that scale release.
Yeah,
but it was a bummer that it was harder to tell people
2 hours out of the way to go see it. Yeah.
And thankfully now I can tell people just go rent it in your house for $5 on iTunes.
Oh, but I can't rent it in my house. Rude.
That's because you can you have the theater nearby playing it that you can see it at.
It's
so
far away. Take an hour walk.
What's the movie called?
Snowpiercer. Well, it's weird too because you would think like after the huge success that Captain America was that they would try to like market be like this film has like the first Avenger in it or something.
It's a very aggressively political movie. Like, it very much is very upfront with its sociopolitical aims. And it also has
a little bit.
Well, not quite. It's no more political than any of the BioShocks are. Like, it's all very on a broad theoretical level. It's no specific world things. Right. And it also has a lot of tonal shifts.
As long as it's not like Elysium, I'm all right.
It's probably better written.
Oh, no, don't worry.
Okay, tangent time.
But the whole thing's a tangent. Just keep going.
Yes, I was going
to it's because it's full of weird tone shifts. Like, it shifts from silly to intense to terrifying to fuck yeah, fist bumping. So that's sort of why. It's like, it's a very hard sell to mass audience kind of movie.
Yes. And that brings me to our final talking point, which kind of ties into that somewhat, is the preview culture, is telling people what to expect from video games. And I think this came on the fact at E3. It came on the fact for two reasons. First was Nintendo Treehouse Life at E3, where Nintendo did a better job at promoting their games than any website did. I mean, partially because you get to work on these games, so you know them in and out much better than any journalist who gets to pick it up for 5 minutes.
Right.
And I think the other thing was the Legend of Korra game that's coming out, and the PlayStation blog wrote a preview that sounded exactly like a preview that you would see at any other video game website. So much so that it read exactly like the one that IGN had.
Hmm.
So people were saying, like, if the game companies themselves are writing previews that sound pretty much like what you're going to give them anyhow, what is the purpose of the game media in doing previews? Because for the most part, previews tend to be mostly positives.
Games media is dead. There is no more games media. There is PewDiePie. And PewDiePie is going to be games media, and that is exactly how that's going.
PewDiePie is love. PewDiePie is life.
That is a good point. That is actually something that came up during this discussion, was how the games industry needs to kind of adapt to the YouTube model, where people, like, there's so many ways to get information about games that you don't necessarily need preview events. Like, Sony can do a preview. Sony has the PlayStation blog. Microsoft has Major Nelson. Nintendo has a Nintendo Direct. So.
Sorry, this dude that looks like Bane just showed up with, I think he has 15 health bars?
I know who you're talking about.
God damn. Okay, sorry, keep going.
Yeah.
I also want to point out that one of my guys is named Brocopolis Demopolis. And
that's amazing.
And he's about to get eaten, so.
Anyhow.
Bagpipes.
But yeah, I think, you know, I think a lot of people, video content is, one, I think video content is just a lot easier for people to digest because you don't have to read, which, sadly enough, is something people don't enjoy doing these days.
What's reading?
And it's also, and I kind of agree with this, especially when it comes to video games, I'd much rather see the game than hear you talk about it or read your words about it, because that's, you know, you get to see a lot of stuff that you wouldn't get in words. You get to see, like, does it control well? How's the frame rate? Is everything responsive? Does it look ugly in motion? Because, you know, like, written words and screenshots don't necessarily do every game justice. And, I mean, really, the only reason people do previews is because of hits. Because you don't get previews for every game. Like, you're not necessarily going to get a Just Dance preview. You're not going to get, like, the Ubisoft Fitness game previews. You're going to get, like, 3 hands-on Call of Duty previews. You're going to get Smash Brothers previews. You're going to get Evolve hands-on. And Evolve's a good example of that, actually, because everybody from the games press has come out so impressed with Evolve, but everything I see in the game doesn't relay what they're telling me about how amazing this game is.
I enjoyed Evolve when I play it, but I'm not exactly great at previews, so.
I haven't seen any gameplay of it. I've intentionally, like, just shut myself off from that game.
It's one of those ones I know I'm really curious about, so if I hear it is in fact good, I'll probably just pick it up. So long as I can convince a group of people to also pick it up. But, I think part of it is because. Me? No idea. Like, my PC is aging, so I might have to get a new console. Because is it?
Yeah, if you get it on PS4, I'll play with you.
Okay, if I buy PS4, which I might, since I have started the Uncharted series and I'm falling in love enough that I might have to buy a PS4 for Uncharted 4.
Just wait until you get to the third one before you start singing its praise.
Yeah. I mean, I finished the first one and really liked it. Haven't started the second yet. But
yeah,
I mean, you know, the Xbox One does have Peggle.
Yes. I enjoyed it. Uncharted 1 was the reason I got my PS3. I absolutely love Uncharted 2. I love the multiplayer. Then Uncharted 3 happened, and now I'm kind of wishy-washy on the franchise. So.
I never played 3, apparently. Did I make the right move? Or
I played like an hour of 3. It was alright.
So yes, James, 3's where that makes or breaks a man's resolve.
Okay, yeah.
What was the last good 3 game?
Mass Effect 3.
Yep. I said good.
He said good.
Okay, fine. Okay, Mass Effect 3 is a masterpiece.
Gears of War 3.
You know what? I actually did like Gears of War 3 a lot.
I think you take out the final boss.
Only man. Played 2, so I'm just going to believe you.
Snowpiercer are 2 words?
No, it's 1 word.
No, it's 1 word.
Then even movietickets.com can't find this movie, so...
Yeah, you can find it on iTunes for $5 to rent. So that's probably the best way to get it.
But I live in Los Angeles. I may as well go to a movie theater to see this if I can.
Hold on. I can send you the...
There we go. I got it.
Okay. Yeah, we can do this later on.
Gears of War 3 is good up until, like, the last hour or so.
God of War 3 is good as well.
Yeah, yeah, I'm of course, you know, very heavy on the Mass Effect 3 as a masterpiece train.
God of War 3 is bullshit.
You're the only person on that train. It must be a pretty lonely train.
There are a couple.
All right, with you, James.
Is good as well.
I liked Mass Effect 3. I would not call it a masterpiece by any stretch, though.
It's pretty
one where I think a lot of its issues are made up by the good parts. Like, I was on the Adore the Ending side, so...
Oh, God, let's not get into this.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out that Snowpiercer is such a not seen movie that it only has 36 seaters.
Yeah, it's got a really small release.
Yeah,
because I mean, it's the English language debut of a Korean director. Really oddball. Tilda Swinton as too amazing to share.
Okay, so apparently this is going to be our Snowpiercer episode.
Yes, can we have a Snowpiercer spoiler cast once everyone's seen it?
Yeah, if you're ready.
Okay, once everyone's seen it. All right, so what, until like November?
November
$5.
I've still got to watch Independence Day. So part of the problem with Independence Day was it's 2 hours and 40 minutes long, and nobody told me that.
Was it really?
The one I have is.
Is it that long? I know it's not a short movie.
It's pretty long. I feel like it's at least 2.5 hours, maybe. Well, like maybe once you factor in credits.
Well, let's see, I have my Blu-ray right here.
Dude, I don't want to see it.
145 minutes, so it's about 2 hours and 25 minutes. So it's a bit shorter than Sam said, but it's still a decent length movie.
Right.
And just don't say you don't want to see it now. It's like you had any intention of seeing it.
I had intention. I actually clicked.
You
your
both had 7 months and you didn't see it. So.
Yeah, it was.
The only time a length turns me off of a movie is when I think it's not going to be good to begin with. Like when I heard Transformers. Yeah, when I heard it was almost when I heard it was longer than the third Pirates of the Caribbean, I was like, probably not. And the movies come in, they're all like, yeah, all the same flaws as the last couple. I'm like, I'm gonna wait.
When you heard it was 1 to 5 minutes long, you got disappointed.
I feel like I want to see Transformers, but I also hear that like the length is the biggest issue, and I'm just like,
I don't have the theater to see Transformers and ended up seeing something else.
It feels like a long movie. It feels like it is 3 hours long.
Well, I mean, there's also some other things about Transformers, the newest Transformers, that turn me off, but...
Yeah,
Do we want to... Wait, what?
No, we're not going to... We're not getting into that right now. Actually, we're going to wrap. We can talk about
What's with the sexism in Transformers?
Mark Wahlberg's daughter.
This is an episode about sexism, Earl. Let's just...
Yeah.
Well, it's not an episode about sexism.
So basically, like, Mark Wahlberg's daughter in the movie is, like, 17 or something.
Yes.
And her boyfriend in the film is, like, 20, 21.
20.
Yeah, 20. So, like, they joke about that, and apparently there's, like, an ass shot of... Like, there's a shot of her ass.
Well, the girl isn't actually 17, right?
The actress isn't 17, but they are hyper-sexualizing a character that's meant to be underage.
That's absolutely awful. Puritanical sexuality is just this really bizarre thing.
She also looks younger than she probably actually is.
That's not even my problem with it. That's not even my problem with the relationship. I thought you were talking about the Romeo and Juliet scene.
I don't know what Romeo and Juliet scene. I haven't seen the movie.
I haven't seen either, but basically this is a scene where Mark Wahlberg's daughter's boyfriend pulls out a deed thing that explains that under Texas law he's legally allowed to have sex with Mark Wahlberg's underage daughter.
Jesus, I mean, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
It's like, he's technically not wrong, but who the hell approved that in a movie about toy robots?
Yeah, it's not so much that
Fingers is a movie with bikini-clad Disney Channel stars, and it's less sexist than a trilogy of movies about toy robots.
That is debatable.
It's not even the fact that they all exist. It's the fact that he carries this around in his wallet to show people. It's like having a bank card.
Do you think like whenever they like go out and someone gives them a robot, it's just like he's like taking a card like this is part of the law.
Not a pedophile.
That's what that's exactly what he does in the film. He takes it out to show Mark Wahlberg that it's
that's the James Franco thing all over
that
again.
That is pretty ridiculous.
Do you guys remember the James Franco thing?
But I mean, have you seen this girl though? I kind of did a Google search on her. I see
she was Katara in that Avatar movie that never happened.
It happened. Never forget.
It's honest. Michael Bay is pretty good at casting hot women in his movies. That's not a shock to anybody.
It looks like his neighbor's daughter.
They have the emotional depth of a doorknob, but he cast extremely attractive women.
Yeah. I don't think he had sex with this one to get her on the set.
Not yet, anyhow.
Yeah, I would know. Let's not rule out everything here.
I mean, he did film a hypersexualized underage Megan Fox in Bad Boys 2.
Wait, what?
She was actually like, I don't think she was in the final cut of Bad Boys 2, but there was a scene of her like dancing, gyrating, and with like sexual motions, and she was underage at the time.
How old is wasn't there some rumor that like she washed his car to get like a role in the original Transformers?
She was a dancer. I just watched that scene. There were people doing that whatever.
Now when you say dancer,
it was in a club.
Let's move on. Like an actual dance.
I did that during extra work the other week, and I'm pretty sure some of the people there weren't 18. How do you even cast somebody under 17 anyway?
Did you wear a G-string? Did they give you ones?
I mean,
anyhow,
they gave him fives. No, they gave him twos. They're like, this guy's really worth it. Like, I finally found a purpose for this two.
Did you take someone to the back room?
You know, don't ask, don't tell. I believe is the.
Then he followed up his health bar.
Okay.
I saw a clip on YouTube called "Family Guy Funniest Moments," and I'm wondering how many of these are actually funny.
Probably about 4% at best.
I'll do all of them right now.
Sam, yep. If I gave you some 20s, will you let me like see your Yu-Gi-Oh collection?
I mean, that's on the internet for free, but you know, absolutely.
I'm saying, will you let me see your
Yu-Gi-Oh Yu-Gi-Oh collection? I've seen the sexy Super Nintendo ones.
You know, there's sexy Yu-Gi-Oh somewhere.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, there are pictures. There's a picture online with me with the majority of my Yu-Gi-Oh cards hitting a ceiling fan, but you know.
We're done. We're out.
Blue Eyes White Dragon.
Gone off the rails.